straight arrow away.
Sit back and enjoy the stroke play of Meg Lanny.
This is excellent batting by Ash Gardner.
Jonathan strikes again. She's on a hat-trick. She comes at Molyneux. Catch is taken by Perry.
The Australian women's cricket team win their fifth T20 World Cup title in front of a magical crowd at the MCG.
And welcome back to The Scoop. We are the cricket podcast dedicated to the women's game. I'm Emily Collin.
And I'm Laura Jolly.
And LJ, we're back. We're back to regular programming after our special series, Baggy Green Queens and the Ashes. It's crept up on us, as always. There's been a bit happening. So on today's show, we've got former Aussie legend and, of course, the current Australian assistant coach, Shelley Nitschke, to talk through the Ashes squad. There's been heaps of talking points. But firstly, LJ, we know that there's been a lot of chaos in the world, particularly because of this, you know, this COVID pandemic that is just not going away. It's still here. And so that has meant that the whole Ashes series has been brought through a week. So LJ, you were on deck throughout this time. Was it a bit of a shock for you to find out that everything was going to be brought forward and the reasons why?
Yeah, I think originally we saw all the borders were reopening and we all just thought, happy days, the schedule's going to be able to go ahead as planned. Wonderful. Of course, COVID had its say once more. So basically, the team have to go to New Zealand earlier than expected. New Zealand changed their border rules. The team now have to spend 10 days in isolation there before they are allowed out to get ready for the World Cup. So that has meant that clashed with the last few ODIs and has meant the whole thing has had to be brought forward. So basically the test match has stayed the same, probably as the key match in the middle there. That's still at Manuka, still starting January 27. But instead we've got all three T20s starting at Adelaide Oval from Thursday the 20th. And then the first ODI will be at Manuka after the test, followed by the last two ODIs at Melbourne's Junction Oval at the end of the series. They've also changed the A series to mirror what's happening with the Ashes. And unfortunately, it did mean that Sydney is no longer part of the schedule, which obviously is a huge shame for Sydney fans. But I think once they had to split up the white ball games with the test in the middle, it was just going to be too hard to have that fourth venue in the mix. So one of Adelaide, Melbourne or Sydney was going to miss out.
Nice. LJ, you've done a very good job of remembering that all. I think I've been back on deck for about a week and it hasn't sunk into my brain yet. So I'm glad that I got you to tell me where I need to be and when. And we've got a squad. It's been long awaited and I feel like there's been a lot of discussion around this Ashes squad and who's going to make it. But today the selectors announced the 15-player squad. So we've got Megan Shute and Jess Jonathan back, which is great news for them. And I'm sure that a lot of fans will be pumped to see those girls back in. And for the first time, Alana King has been named in an Australian squad. So there was lots of sort of, debate in the lead up following the WBBL season. We saw Amanda J. Wellington. She had an outstanding WBBL, but so did Alana King. So, and it looks like the selectors have landed on Kingy for this squad, which is really exciting. She's been on the Scoop twice, so we love Kingy at the Scoop. And then, unfortunately, we won't see Stella Campbell, Molly Strano, Maitland Brown, Georgia Redmayne in the squad, but there, of course, they'll be in Australia A, and we never know. You might see them playing their part in the Ashes. And, of course, we've also got Sophie Molyneux and Georgia Wareham that are both injured. But, LJ, what did you like about this squad? Were you surprised? And what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I think the Australian selectors probably had to take a slightly different approach to what they had been hoping a month or so ago. When I did speak to Matthew Mott pretty soon after WBBL, and he did indicate there would be a fair bit more change between the formats. But I think with the COVID restrictions, that hasn't ended up being possible. They've had to kind of pick and stick to a smaller squad because of the bubble that's going to be around the team. But it is exciting to see Alana King get her opportunity. It's always fun having an uncapped player around the squad. And so good seeing JJ back.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. And so I guess
your favourite things about the squad or in the Oz A squad too?
Oz A squad. Oh, one I was probably surprised about was Courtney Sipple. I think she's probably not one that maybe a lot of people would have expected to be in that A squad, but I think she showed for the Brisbane Heat and WBBL 7 that she's a really good bowler, and it's going to be exciting to see her in the green and gold, and as well as Phoebe Litchfield. I think, yeah, it was only a matter of time before we're going to see her in the green and gold as well. And so I'm really hoping that we can see some good performances from Phoebe. And I guess like the one that everyone has really been talking about, and we were saying before, we've probably never seen so much debate and contention and fans getting so involved in a selection is the whole Alana King versus Amanda Jade Wellington. It's kind of just taken over Twitter today, which has been interesting to see. But yeah, it was interesting to listen to how Sean Flegler framed his reason for selecting Kingy. He sort of thought that Kingy was more of a like-for-like replacement for Georgia Wareham, who's obviously been in that Australian team for a long time. So, I mean, the selectors, they've got all the rights to pick who they got to pick. But yeah, Wello had an outstanding WBBL as well. So it's probably always going to be a line call. What did you think, LJ, of that one?
Yeah, I think like you said, it was always going to be a super tight call, and both players had really good WBBL campaigns. Their numbers were, Weller took more wickets. King had the lower economy rate. And I think at the end of the day, they do have a tendency with their bowling attack to really try and strangle opposition sides, probably with the exception of the express quicks, who have a bit more freedom to get tonked around. And Wareham's someone who is known for her economy and pace through the air and being able to squeeze a bit more than someone like Wello, who just gets big spin and can be tremendously successful or probably go for more runs. So yeah, sounds like they've picked the player that best fits their plans and their current approach, I guess you'd say.
Yeah, it all makes sense. And so, LJ, you're good at explaining this sort of stuff. There's 15 players in each squad, in the Ashes squad and the Australia A squad, and there's going to be quite a lot of restrictions on these players due to the current COVID situation in basically every city that the Ashes are travelling to. So what does that mean in terms of flexibility and why we still might see Redmayne and Campbell play a part in the Ashes?
Yeah, so it's been an interesting one. They've obviously split the 30 players into 15 in each squad across Oz and Oz A, which they may not have done in non-COVID times, because they would have been easily able to send the fringe players from the Australia squad back to play Oz A, and they have indicated that still might be the case, but they're keeping the two teams completely separate. Part of that is just if there are COVID cases in either camp, they don't want it to take down the whole Ashes, which is going to be particularly important getting closer to the back end, where we've been told that if a player tests positive for COVID soon, close before that flight to New Zealand, they'll miss the whole World Cup. They can't catch up later. If you're not on that plane when the rest of the team goes, that's it. So they've got to be so careful with their protocols to make sure those big stars are available, not just for the Ashes, but for the World Cup. So with that in mind, they're keeping the two squads totally separate. Their protocols for getting into Adelaide have been really interesting, separate flights, some players are driving, periods of isolation on arrival to try and get them into that bubble as safely as possible. And so what that means is someone like Redmayne or Campbell, who were in the India squad, but got few opportunities. Definitely Georgia Redmayne carried drinks the whole tournament. So they wanted to get game time. They wanted to be playing. So to get her on the field, she's best off being in the A squad, play probably all six games for Australia A unless she's required by the senior team. She gets really good experience, and which is more than what she'd be if she was just stuck carrying drinks in the senior side. Doesn't mean that they can't have players moving between the teams at all. They've still said they're going to try and send players back to play in Oz A if they're not getting a game for Australia, but it is going to take really strict protocols, potentially separate changing rooms, no touching on the field, the sort of things we've seen in the Big Bash with various players. So it just sounds like a nightmare. But it's still going to mean there's going to be big ramifications for the World Cup too, I guess, with the squad, which hasn't been picked yet.
Yeah, you're right, LJ. So the battle for the World Cup squad is not over yet. So obviously the Ashes squad it's meant to cover three formats because there's obviously it's a multi-format series. But for that World Cup squad, which doesn't have to be picked until the 25th, that's obviously just for the one format, for the one-day format. So I'm sure the selectors will be watching very closely at that Australia A group to see if anyone's in really great form or if there's someone like a Georgia Redmayne or a Stella Campbell that they want over in that group for the World Cup. They can certainly force their way in there. So it's going to be a really exciting series, both the Ashes and, of course, the Australia A versus England A. And, yeah, I think there's 8 days to go, which is unbelievable, a little bit stressful, but it's going to be an unbelievable series and we can't wait for it to get underway. And now we hope you enjoyed listening to one of the greats of Aussie cricket, Shelley Nitschke. And Shelley Nitschke, a legend of Australian cricket, welcome to The Scoop. Shell, Ashes squad day is always an exciting one. How are you feeling? What's the vibe been around the group heading into the Ashes this year?
Yeah, look, I think it's obviously with the squad coming out today, it's all starting to get, a bit real, which is good because there's been obviously a lot of discussion around different things happening in the world at the moment. So for us, it's nice to get the squad out there and start to think about cricket and getting the series underway. So, you know, an exciting time for Kingy, who's been announced today as a new player. So, yeah, it's good to have that squad out there and get people sort of shifting their focus a bit.
Yeah, first we did want to talk about Kingy, the new face in the squad. You've coached her with the Scorchers this year. Can you talk us a bit about what Kingy's like as a bowler and as a teammate?
Yeah, so, you know, fantastic, obviously, to see Kingy get an opportunity at higher honours, and she's had a good couple of years, particularly at the WBBL and this year for the Scorchers. So, she's a leg spinner coming in to replace, unfortunately, Wolfie, who's injured. But, you know, Kingy, she brings her own style of game. She's, I think, quite quick through the air. She gives the ball some good revs, but she's quite quick through the air. She's got a bit of flair about her. As a teammate, she's sort of one that gets around the girls a lot and really brings the group with her, gets up and about, and was fantastic, I know, in the Scorchers this year in that regard, in bringing in the team together and the internationals coming in. So, you know, I think she's going to add a really good element to the squad.
Yeah, awesome. And Shell, you would have done a bit of work with Kingy throughout the national performance squads and things like that. How have you seen her evolve as a leg spinner over the years?
Yeah, I did. We had her up here at the NPS program a couple of years ago. And I think she's evolved nicely. She's probably got a few more variations. I think the main thing for Kingy is her match awareness and game sense has really evolved. I think we've always known that the skill has always been there, but I think it's her game sense that's evolved and her ability to, I guess, think on her feet now out in the middle when she doesn't have people around her to tell her what to do. So I think that's been a major sort of shift in her. She fields really well. She's a bundle of energy out there. So it's been good to watch her game grow over the past few seasons, and now she's been rewarded with some good performances.
I reckon she'll wear the sunnies and the green and gold.
I hope so. Or the white. She does it. That's her thing. So, you know, I hope she stays true to what she does and doesn't let the green and gold scare her from bringing in her her uniqueness. So, you
we
know,
we do
we'll
love
see.
Her style.
Sunnies and the baggy green.
Yeah, just a bit of flair. Won't hurt us.
And so, obviously, there's unfortunately no Wareham or Molyneux for the Ashes, but JJ's back in great news. How do you see JJ and Kingy potentially fitting into the same 11 and complementing one another?
Yeah, look, I think, it's fantastic to have JJ back. She, disappointingly for her, missed the India series, but then came back and had a really good WBBL. So she just seems to sort of pick up where she left off. And I think we definitely missed her reliability in the India series of the ball. So I definitely think that there's room for her and Kingy. You know, JJ's... she can play a defensive role as well as an attacking role and very adaptable. And Kingy being a leg spinner, they're more of your attacking type players. So, you know, I think whilst they still are both spinners, there's definitely scope for them both because they've got certainly enough variations and enough differences to be able to slot into the same team.
Yeah, speaking of JJ, how impressive is it that she can miss that India series, be out with injury, but then just come back into WBBL like that and have such a dominant campaign?
Yeah, I think it just speaks volumes for, first of all, JJ's professionalism. You've seen her do it before. You know, she's missed a few series before or whatever with some small injuries, and she's just able to pick up where she left off. And, you know, she does a lot of work. She puts in a lot of volume with her skills. And I think that pays dividends for things like this. She knows her game really well. She's really confident with it. She's got, she's got good cricket sense. So she's just able to back that and pick up where she left off. And, you know, I've been doing a bit of work with her the last couple of days before we sort of head off in the Ashes. And, you know, she hasn't sort of missed a beat since she missed a bit of time out with that previous injury. So I think it's just a credit to sort of the work she does on her skills. And, you know, she's been doing it for a while now too. So, She keeps her game plan pretty simple and she's just able to execute.
And Ash Gardner's another one, Shell, that we saw her bowl really well throughout that India series. What role do you see her playing in the spin group in the upcoming Ashes?
Yeah, look, Ashes, like you said, she had a really good series of the ball, I think, against India. Played a really big role for us in the Test match, and I think Ash is going to continue to play a good role in Test match cricket for us, as well as the ODIs. Probably, you know, we might see her in the T20s as well. England, I guess, have all right-hand batters and we've got two spinners that take the ball away from the right-hand batters. So at times Ash doesn't get exposed as much with the ball in T20 cricket, but certainly not because she's not able. It's just a matter of our team makeup. But, you know, I think she's going to play a pretty significant role, particularly in the ODIs and the Test match through the Ashes for us.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of talk during the India series about the work she did over the winter to sort of tweak her game, particularly for the Test match. Have you seen some of those small changes that she's made?
Yeah, I think that the main, you know, I think with her bowling, it's been evolving for some time and she's been slowly just working away at different things and finding her right pace and her right lines for different formats. I think a lot of the work she'd done was sort of in and around her batting and technically and trying to make herself a bit tighter for Test match cricket. And she played really well for us against India. So she certainly was showing some signs of that work paying off. I think with her bowling, you know, she's long time. She's a great bowler and, you know, she's always been a good performer for us in ODI cricket. So to me, it was no surprise that she bowled really well in ODIs and in the Test match. Especially, I think she was with the Test match, she was, you know, she's able to get her rhythm. So she sort of settled in and bowled a couple of really good spells and some long spells as well, which was really important for us.
And Shell, any insight from you into the Alana King versus Amanda Jade Wellington selection? It has been the talking point of the day. So
it certainly has been. Yeah, there's been a fair bit of publicity about it. And obviously today the squad's dropped and King's been named in our team. But I sort of didn't have too much input into that. I guess, you know, I've watched them both. During obviously had King in my team, but watched Wellow pretty closely during the WBBL too, and she was fantastic. So I don't know the decisions behind it, but you know, it's a tough call, and on this occasion, I guess they've given the opportunity to Kingy, but Welly was absolutely fantastic through the WBBL, and I'm sure she's going to do really well in the Oz A games.
And it's been a bit of an interesting lead into the Ashes. The WBBL ended in late November and then the COVID situation kind of wreaked havoc with WNCL a bit. From a coaching perspective, has that changed anything about how you're going to prepare the players for this series, considering some of them, like Moons, haven't played at all since the end of WBBL?
Oh, look, I don't think so. To be honest, I'm not sure we've got much opportunity to prepare, to have much control over how we prepare. We sort of are arriving in Adelaide a few days before the first game. We've got a couple of practice matches back-to-back on the one day. And then we sort of just some decent sessions and then we're into it. So we don't really have much opportunity to change how we prepare. But we do know that the girls have been doing a hell of a lot of work. I think our messaging is just going to be around backing your skills and your preparation and everything that you've done leading into this. And even though they may not have had the amount of match practice that we potentially would have liked, I think we've shown in the past that we can overcome that as long as we're really sort of switched on come game day and just making the most of our practice games and putting ourselves in some, you know, trying to put ourselves into some tough positions when we're even in the nets and things like that. So I think the girls have got the ability to overcome that. And while it's not ideal, you know, it is what it is, unfortunately. But, I back us in to be able to sort of get through, I guess, not having as much match practice as we would have liked.
Yeah, it is what it is. I feel like that's just what everyone's saying at the moment. And it's been pretty, like, chaotic for, I guess, like the past 2 years, Shell. Has that sort of, like, change the way that you, Moddy and Ben have to work together, and do you just have to sort of, I guess, be super adaptable the whole time just because everything seems to change?
Yeah,
24/7?
I think so. Yeah, well, no, I don't think so. You're absolutely right. We talk about it all the time about being adaptable. And if there's anything that's come out of the last couple of years, it is simply that. It's about being adaptable. And I think also just accepting the fact that not everything's going to run as smoothly as you would have liked. And it's not going to be perfect. So we know coming into this series, you know, with some of the protocols and restrictions, that not everything's going to be as we would have liked with our lead up and our training sessions. But just being really adaptable, and I guess, you know, in some ways we don't plan too much ahead, and we're not doing session plans too much in advance, which in some ways is a good thing, because you know that there's going to be some changes. But yeah, just to be adaptable, and also just trying to, I think, sort of stay pretty level and stay calm around that too, because I think as a coach, if you get yourself into a fluster because things are changing, then you know that the players are going to pick up on that as well. So you've just got to learn to roll with the punches, whether it's in your makeup or not, I think.
Yeah, and you've been in this role since 2018 now. What do you love about it, and what are some of the challenges been since you've been doing it?
I just love it. I think when I first came into the role, I sort of realised that, not being in high performance, I have missed not being in high performance, and being back around the group again in a high performance role with a team like that was sort of, you know, where I guess I wanted to be and take my career. So I certainly love, working closely with the girls and I guess seeing them, seeing them play well and sort of starting to execute some things that you've spoken about, or I guess coming to you with questions and knowing that you're actually having an impact on that. And just sort of, I do enjoy sort of having a bigger impact, or trying to have a bit more influence in and around the culture of the team as well, which I think is really important. So it's just fantastic to be involved with, I think, this group. And, you know, what changes have there been? Well, where do I start? I think in the last 2 years, you know, the team has probably evolved a little bit as far as personnel goes. Not significantly, I would say, but I think the main changes are what we're seeing now with COVID and just that extra layer of challenge that it brings. You know, the girls are expected to go out there and perform for their country. And then you bring in everything else around protocols and biosecurity and that, and that just adds an extra layer, and just seeing that the way they respond to that and sort of helping through that has been, it's been really rewarding, but it's tough, you know.
Yeah. And Shell, I think we've had Motti on this exact podcast singing your praises before, so maybe it's your turn now. He's been obviously very successful as a head coach in his time. What do you think it is about his approach to coaching that brings out the best in this Aussie team?
Yeah, I think, Motti's, he's just a good guy, right? So he's very personable. He's got a lot of empathy for the players and what they're going through, and has a really good relationship with the players. So, but also he's very realistic in what he expects and things like that. So, I think from my point of view, I sort of, when I went into my first head coach role with Scorchers, I know a lot of the things and the traits that I picked up sort of came from the way Motti approaches things. He's, pretty laid back and sort of lets the players have, I guess, as much input into their own game and take ownership for a lot of things, which I think they thrive on. And treating them like people and making sure that, we're really open to people coming into the group and not closing ourselves off and think all those sorts of things I've really learned from him and tried to sort of take for when I went to a head coach role. So, I think that's sort of the main things. And I know from a cricket perspective, if ever I've got any questions, I know he doesn't sort of overcomplicate things as well. And it's quite sort of clear on his messaging and things like that.
And you've been part of plenty of Ashes series yourself as a player. What do you love about the Ashes, and what have been some of your favourite memories you've been involved in?
Yeah, I think, the Ashes, it's just special. Like it's just that old rivalry between Australia and England, and everyone sort of, I think, takes a step up for it and really, it's steeped in a lot of history. So I think there's always that on players' mind that, you know, that there's a lot that's come before and a lot of stories about the Ashes and things like that. So it's certainly a pretty special, and, you know, it's getting to be a bit different now, but it was one of the only times we would play test match cricket. But now that's starting to, you know, as we see against India, that's starting to change a little bit, which is great. But I think it's just steeped in that history of there's that tradition and competitiveness against England. So players sort of, you know, take that step up. And for me, I think probably one of my greatest memories of the Ashes was winning them back, I think, in Bankstown in 2011, I think it was. Because at one point the Ashes went, when it was just test matches, it got down to being just one test. So obviously if you held the Ashes, all you had to do was draw the test. So we didn't hold the Ashes. So we actually, to get the Ashes back, we had to win the test. And, we had a pretty good performance there at Bankstown. I think it's been written about more recently, again, with Renee Farrell took the hat-trick and we got him back, and it was a pretty good moment. So I was involved in 2005 when we lost it for the first time in 40 years. And you know, I've spoken to someone recently about that too, and that was that hurt, because you saw how much it meant to them and the celebrations that went on afterwards. Yeah. To be involved in that team that lost it after 40 years, it was nice to be able to be involved in the same team that got it back for them as well.
No. Do you still have your baggy green shell?
I certainly do.
Does it live at home?
It does live at home. Well, actually, I think it's in storage at the moment. We've still got some stuff in storage in Adelaide. I think it might be down there, but I've absolutely got it.
Do you remember, like, was there a presentation or any of, like, I know we see these very long presentations these days. Was there anything like that when you got yours?
We certainly did have a presentation, yeah. I don't remember the cameras and stuff being there like they are now, but played my first one in England, and Fitzy presented me with my baggy green. So I do remember that. So that was a good day. That was in 2005.
Oh, beautiful. Oh, yeah. Shell, it's been absolutely awesome to have you on the scoop. We wish you all the best for the upcoming Ashes series, and hopefully catch you there and hopefully see some great cricket.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Sit back and enjoy the stroke play of Meg Lanning.
This is excellent batting by Ash Gardner.
Jonathan strikes again. She's on a hat-trick. She comes at Molyneux.